evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the March 6th, 2017, regular Othello City Council Workshop. And would you all please rise for a short invocation? I'd like you to please pray for the blessing upon this city and upon the decisions that this council makes. Now, if you all please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Item 1.03 on our agenda, or 1.04, is the roll call. Gina and Larry McCourty are absent tonight, and I entertain a motion to excuse those members from tonight's proceedings.
Make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 1.05 is citizen input. It's a portion of the city council meeting where anyone has an opportunity to address the city council for up to 5 minutes. On any subject they like. Is there anyone here tonight who would like to address the city council? If so, please raise your hand. I'll recognize you and you can come to the microphone. Okay. Seeing none, we'll move to item 2, is the approval of our agenda tonight. I'd entertain a motion to approve tonight's agenda.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And we'll move to our current business, 3.01. And tonight we're privileged to have Jen Stevenson, director of the Old Hotel Art Gallery. And she is going to do a presentation about the capital project program through the Washington State Historic Preservation.
Close. Yes.
Yeah.
Good. So let's see if I can figure out. I might have to stay.
Thank you.
So, I'm the director of the Old Hotel Art Gallery, and I've been there for probably 18 months. I've addressed you all before, and we have done quite a bit of work in the last 5 years on our building, and so we have applied and are on the short list for what's called a Heritage Capital Projects Grant, and we're up for $56,000. It's a legislative grant. It's a 2-to-1 match. So for every $2 that we spend, they reimburse us or give us a dollar for more projects. So we've already completed $102,275 in change in the last 5 years. The rest of the funds are going to be primarily, they do count in-kind matches, in-kind volunteer hours, and pretty much all the rest will be volunteer hours of labor for fixing landscaping after we are completed. So we're number, let's see if I have it. Okay, over here on that one, I'm pointing to. We're number 24 on this list. All 35 of these projects are on the approved list. The legislative sets aside every biennium $10 million. All of the projects counted together were just under $9 million this time. All of those that qualified. It is a very competitive process. It's a point system. Out of 100 points, and I actually got 84 points on this grant, and I'm still number 24. And basically, between number 7 and number like 27, there's a 7-point spread. I'm like an eighth of a point behind the group right in front of us. Some of those projects are $750,000, is the largest one. There is another one in our county. Ritzville is also on this list. They made it to number 4 this time, but they're only $43,000 because of the capital budgets being under such dire circumstances this year with legislature, because of lawsuits, they're over their capital projects budget by $125 million if all they fund is McCleary education. So, not that that's bad, but in terms of our project, that's damaging. So just some of the things that we've done over the last 5 years, the stucco was the third exterior layer. The building was built in 1912, and they went to go and paint it, and it wouldn't even hold paint anymore. It was cracked and in such bad shape. So they went to lap siding, and that is the look of the original building. They did have consultation to go, and this was before I got there. They did have consultation to go down to the original lap siding, and were told your building could possibly fall down and collapse if you go back to that because of all of the other stuff that's been put on it, and it will never work. So, stuff that we've done since I have been there, we found asbestos on the ductwork. That's the white stuff. And my board kept saying, but we have this high energy efficient furnace, but when you have ductwork that is rusty and corroded and has big gaps in it and covered in asbestos, that doesn't really lead to energy efficiency. And we also have renters in the building. The Chamber of Commerce is there. All Scratch Bakery is there. So once we discovered asbestos, that was an instant. We have to fix this. Now we have insulated ductwork. This is our new stuff. We had this done during the fair. While we were out at fair, because we closed during fair, and we have a booth out at the fair, we have we try to have an interactive, we call it a pop-up museum, at the fair. When nobody was in the building, we had that done, or less people were in the building and not open to the public. Our plumbing was a disaster. We had 5 or 6 different types of plumbing, terracotta, black pipe, garbage. I mean, it was horrible. And in fact, there was a fitting to, this is a fitting to a dishwasher, was one of the Band-Aid projects that they had put on. And it was time to stop Band-Aiding the problem and just start over. So now over Christmas, we had a total plumbing overhaul. So other capital improvement projects that we've done, there were part of the grant, we had architects come in and do a structural survey and all kinds of different things. They listed the top 10 things that needed to be done to the building in order of importance. And once we accomplish everything that is included in the $56,000 request, we'll have accomplished like the top 7 or 8 in that. So we've done structural repairs to the basement. In the last 5 years, Master Gardeners have donated all their time and gotten other grants, outside grants. And there is drought-tolerant garden in the back. There was a re-roof, all new rain gutters. We've purchased new air conditioners that are not currently installed. It's not really the time to do that. Thank you for Sears going out of business. We were able to buy ones that are younger than I am old. That's what they were working on. Did some landscaping, did some other lighting things. So some things needed to be to say goodbye. So anyways, what our $56,000 will cover is, this is the top picture is the porch. And there is a huge gap and a slope towards the building. If you can see, that's a 6-foot level that's actually on the edge of the porch. And there's a big gap. It's not supposed to be that way. When it rains or there's this apocalyptical snow like we've had, water leaks into our foundation because it slopes towards the building. And then there's cracks and all kinds of things. It is the original porch, and it would be great to save it, but at this stage, we can't save it. It's too far gone. So we need to redo the porch. The stairs are also original, not really safe. The weird handrail is original, but not up to current code. So we would like to be ADA accessible, at least to our main floor, but we cannot put in a ramp until we have our new porch. So the big space here next to the building is where we would be putting in our ramp, coming right off of the edge of the porch. This is so fun to shovel in the snow, I can tell you, but it's not good to go over in wheels. When I started at Old Hotel, I had broken my ankle on my scooter and got to exchange my motorized scooter for a scooter with wheels. And this doesn't look like a very steep hill, but on wheels that is like deathly scary. So anyways, we need to do some new sidewalks, and I've been told that the brick is extreme no-no for ADA accessibility. So we need to fix those things as well. And then we need to put in a parking pad because our parking lot is gravel. And then some landscaping to fix all of the work that after we've done all of that. So that's what $56,000 covers. So I've got some handouts for you. That's just, I've got enough for each of you. So you're welcome to all take them. I know you already have one. I forgot. So that's just the information about what we've done and what we're planning on doing. Just those projects that are on the 35, the list of 35. This next information is mostly about how those projects affect our economy statewide. All of our projects would be local only. I've gotten quotes for that $56,000 from a local contractor. So all of our taxes, labor, everything would be directly from Othello. So that's just some information about all of the projects. And basically what we're asking for is we need letters written to our legislator, phone calls made, emails, all of those things. And so that's what this next smaller sheet is that's coming around, is I would like to request either the city council as a whole, individually, if you work for a business, coming from a business perspective, as many letters as we can from the community saying support all 35 of these projects. All 35 projects are doing the exact same thing. They're asking for their community support to their legislators, saying, because all 35 together of us are stronger than just me saying, please fund number 24, which isn't going to work. We have to have the entire, all of the projects together funded. So, any specific questions?
So all these projects are primarily tourism type?
There's all kinds of different things. Mm-hmm. Some of them are tourism. Some of them are, there's a city of Tumwater is in there. There is, some projects are archival projects, so you'll never get in to see it, but it'll protect the projects. Some of them are helping to purchase the property or purchasing, they're anything to do with heritage. Mm-hmm. And this is actually a grant that the things that Rotary is working towards doing to Pioneer Park, that would all apply and work if the airplane was taken on from the city's perspective. That could be the match. So that's a potential for the next biennium. So
tonight you're asking for a letter of support?
Yes. So.
You guys don't see any problem with that, do you?
No.
Okay,
great. Also, I'm going to send around our upcoming whiskey and wine tasting event during the Sandhill Crane Festival. We have local food sampling as well. I am uber local, I guess is how you could, my focus. We want to have all kinds of people come to, last year we estimated 2,000 people in our building during last year's whiskey and wine tasting event. It was hugely popular. We're making steps to make it hugely popular again this year. We have a lot of locals come to this, a lot of non-locals, a lot of people that have never been in the building that have been here their entire lives or in other communities close by. So we really try to focus on the history of Othello and getting people here, spending money, taxes, all kinds of.
Great idea.
Thank
Perfect
you.
Perfect timing. How much is it?
The wine and whiskey tastes are 2 for $5. And the whiskey is from Ritzville, and the winery is from Mattawa, and all of the food sampling is all free. So.
Perfect timing.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Item 3.02 is Janelle Woods, and she has a presentation tonight for the City Council.
Hi. my name's Janelle Wood.
My husband and I have lived here for 3.5 years. We came here for my husband's job. He's an administrator at the high school. He's vice principal there. Some of you in this room have heard this presentation, but bear with me. I know a lot of you haven't. We moved here for his job, and we have 4 children, ages 7, 5, 3, and 1. Our son is at Ludicaga, and I volunteer there every Friday. We're pretty involved in community service through the Nazarene Church. My husband and I met in graduate school at Northwest University in Kirkland. We were both getting our master's degree in counseling psychology. My husband used what he got to better his education skills, first with teaching and then as an educator or an administrator. And I became an advocate for King County. I worked for the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office for a number of years. Part of my job there was to speak on behalf of women who are in crisis or having a hard time, to walk them through a process. So today, I come before you speaking on behalf of maybe people like me and people that aren't like me. I've spent the last 3.5 years just talking to people here in this community. And I hope whatever I say is said out of love and caring for people here in Othello. So with that, I'll start my presentation. This is Imagine If, a big vision for Othello, coming together for the sake of our future. So the first question is, what does Othello look like today? It's different depending on who you ask, right? I remember Carlos Gonzalez in a meeting a couple years ago, he said that Othello is all about the children. And in Adams County, 35% of the population is below the age of 18. So in a way, it is about the kids. Sometimes people think of low-income housing. We drive through Othello. Or community events. I know when we first moved here, I thought everybody went to the sporting events in Othello, especially the high school ones, because I saw everybody and I kept seeing the same people over and over again. Or community spirit. Or agriculture. These are friends of ours that have a dairy farm. So what are some great things about Othello? This is not a comprehensive list, but these are things I see. It's family friendly. We've got the 4th of July, which, you know, I'm from Snohomish, and I went to school, my bachelor's degree is from Seattle Pacific, and I've seen the 4th of July in Seattle, but the 4th of July here is pretty spectacular, especially considering what small town we have. We have lots of groups that are very community focused. These are just a couple, right? Beautification Committee, Eagles, Lions, Senior Center. We have a comprehensive, great professional healthcare system providing services for the entire community. There's a lot of towns that don't have anything like that. We have wonderful outdoor recreation if you're a sports person, okay? Hunting, fishing. We have a lot of churches helping this community. We also have very strong visionary leaders focused on positive change. It's an agricultural haven. I know I can't go to church during certain times of the year without being asked if I want onions or potatoes or apples. That's something special about Othello. We also have a lot of job opportunities across all sectors. What are some challenges facing Othello? And again, this is not comprehensive. But we have poverty and low income. 25%, according to the research I could find online, live in poverty, and about 50% have low income in Othello. It's a disengagement issue. We have a lot of people doing a lot of great things, but we also have people that are so busy. It's kind of like Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, you have the basic things, food and water and air and safety, and then you can get to this love and self-actualization piece. But if you're down here where your basic needs aren't being met, or you live in poverty or low income, perhaps you're disengaged from community activities because you're focused on the things that you have to get done for your family. We have a lot of different groups, which is great, but sometimes it can cause division because we're all doing our own thing. Aesthetics, the purpose of the Beautification Committee and groups like that, and people in this community who love it so much are working on this. In fact, I know a youth group that's out working this Saturday on the aesthetics, so we can welcome the Sandhill Crane Festival people. It's a rural location, which can sometimes cause isolation for people, especially during the winters. There's a rapid population growth happening, and one projected to happen in the future. There's a lot of babies being born here, and a lot of people moving to Othello. There's a noticeable turnover in professional job sectors. I know that Greg Brandenburg, I've talked to him and shared this presentation with him. That's definitely an issue, and he's working on that, that turnover. And I know that the school district has that, and I've heard from Steve McFadden that there's other industry leaders that are suffering with people leaving Othello. In fact, I don't know if you guys all know Tim Taft, but one of the jokes he made to us is that people come here to either start their careers or to end their careers. And when we first moved here, and sometimes even now, I get asked, when are you guys leaving? And it's supposed to be a joke, but it's not really that funny, you know? There's housing issues, which I know some of you up there are addressing. There's an education issue. So I think it was 1 in 3 people don't have high school diploma that's in above the age of 25, I think, is what I saw online in Othello. And 14% of Adams County residents have bachelor's degrees. So what are some of the needs in this community, and how are they being addressed currently? We need inexpensive meals. Well, we have a lot of people helping with that. And this is, again, not comprehensive. This is just things that I've seen and the people I've talked to. Place to play, Parks and Rec, OSD, churches, Burger King. I used to take my kids to Burger King all the time for their indoor recreation. Free necessities, churches, food bank, counseling, advocacy services, CBHA, integrated healthcare services, pregnancy resources, CBHA. We also have Crossroads Pregnancy Resource Center out of Moses Lake that helps with some of that. Educational programs, the school district, community schools, churches, even the old hotel. A place to stay warm. CBHA, community hospital. They deal with a lot of the repercussions of people not staying warm, right? Asthma and health issues that come as a result of that. Employment training. The school district, Big Bend Community College, auditorium for events. We have the school district, churches, Reichert Show House. Place to read, the school district, McColumbia Library. And I also would like to add Ironworks, which is my favorite place to go, a place to gather. School district, churches, CBHA, Ironworks. So how do people feel about living here? How do they feel? I try to put myself in other people's shoes, just talking. If you took a survey and asked the kids from Othello High School where they dream of ending up in 10 years, how many of them would say Othello? Now, a lot of them will come back. They have family ties and there's job opportunities here. But if you asked them today, what would they say? I had 2 teenagers in my house this evening, so I said, what do you think? And she said, maybe 30%. She said, but that seems really high. Nobody wants to stay here. And that's just a high schooler, that's their perspective, and it's not indicative of everybody, but that's the answer I got tonight. If you asked an elderly resident who has lived here for 60 years what they look forward to here, what would they say? I asked an elderly resident, Everett Cole, this question, and he quoted somebody, which I thought was really interesting, Lyle Menzer, who used to be the mayor here. He owned a hardware store. He said, the worst day of my life will be the day that I have nowhere to go, nothing to do, and no one needs me. And a number of years ago, I had the privilege of doing a project with World War II veterans. And the best thing about doing that project was getting to listen to men in their 80s and 90s talk about their stories and how they wanted to affect the next generation. They wanted to share their life with others. On a scale of 1 to 10, how do professionals feel about living here, and how do their spouses feel? My husband loves living here, and most of the time I do too. But there are times when it's hard. It's hard for me. Roger Teamy. He was quoted in an Adams County magazine in 1974, I believe. as saying that the number one thing he looks for in hiring people is a wife who wants to live in a dome. And, you know, sometimes it is difficult. If you asked a mom who works two jobs to make ends meet, provides for 5 mouths other than her own, what she loves about this community, what would she tell you? And going back to what I said earlier, with the poverty and the low income, if you're working that hard and just trying to make ends meet, I don't know what she'd tell you, but it might be difficult to care. So imagine, what will Othello look like in 5 years? Imagine there are many people in Othello who are interested in helping others to better our community, because there absolutely are. You know, I was talking about the 4th of July, and I used to think that was the best thing about Othello. And then my husband and I, we took our kids and we helped with the community baskets this year. And I have to say that was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen a community do. It's been going on for 40 years. And it was just started by a group of guys who got together and said, how can we love on our community? What can we do for the people who don't have what we have? I started delivering these meals and delivering these books and things. And today, I want to say in December, they served 350 families this year. Imagine that 45 years ago, a group of people looked at Othello and they said, we want something better for this community. We want something better for the people around us, for our neighbors. They dreamed up an idea to have health care for everybody. And they built it, and they made it better. And today they're making it the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. In fact, Greg Brandenburg was here at a meeting we had a couple weeks ago where he shared this presentation. He wants it to be the world-class medical center, not just a good one. Not just a good one for Washington State, but the best. So never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. I love this quote. So this is approaching Othello from a holistic perspective. Individual efforts have created positive results, but needs are mostly addressed on a piecemeal basis and are often limited in scope. If we're all working in our individual groups, we can only do so much. There are lots of wonderful people wanting to address these issues. We have been treating symptoms of individual parts, but not the whole community body. And by focusing on where we want to be, we can take the steps necessary to achieve our collective dreams. This is actually a principle that applies in business as well. 85% of small businesses fail within the first 5 years. Why? It's not because people aren't working on the needs and the daily problems that they're having. It's because they're so busy working on those needs that they're not looking to the future and what they want for their business and how they can have the systematic steps necessary to get to their dreams. Places like McDonald's and Starbucks, they succeed. Why? Because they saw where they wanted to be and they took the steps necessary to get there. And I suggest we could do the same thing for Othello. Imagine if it's all about connection and love. We started working together to achieve our mutual goals for this city. The possibilities are endless, but imagine what it could look like. And here are some very specific ideas. So imagine if the Othello School District gifted the city with the 13 acres they own along Cemetery Road. Imagine if the city moved forward with pursuing grants and funding for a community center. Imagine the facility possibilities, after school programs, on-site meals, senior activities, advocacy services, community schools programs, a warming center, indoor recreation, etc. Picture it in your mind. Could it look like that? Place to gather. Place for indoor recreation, maybe people being able to walk around an indoor track in the winter. A place for people to have low-cost meals. So why would you do this? A large community center is already part of the City of Othello's comprehensive plan and has long been talked about by citizens and organizations as a huge need in this community. A community center creates a sense of collective ownership. It fosters city pride. It creates after-school student activities, job and volunteer opportunities. It adds amenities for all citizens, creating possibly more job retention in medical, educational, industrial fields. And it creates a unified sense of purpose. So just last week, I got together with an old friend. He's now the Federal Way mayor. And his advisor, Yard and Weidenfeld. The mayor's name is Jim Farrell. And I shared this presentation with him, and he asked me to share a couple things with you guys today. So my friend Jim, he ran a fiscally conservative campaign opposed to the Performing Arts and Conference Center. It was supposed to be the most expensive project in the city's history. He won election because he opposed it. But he moved forward with the project after his wife asked him, "What would you need to be in favor of this?" He got in there, into office, and people were coming to him and talking to him about how important this was. And he wanted to say yes, but he couldn't, because he kept thinking about the numbers and about how hard it would be. And his wife said, "What would you need?" And so they decided to do a blue ribbon panel, I think that's what it's called. And it came back with all this information about what it would do for the city. And so he moved forward, and that's going to be opening this summer. He wanted me to share this quote. "I was wrong," he said. "No is safe. It's easy to say no. Yes means services for the community. The city is not a community unless there is a collective voice. You need public spaces, a place to drive to, not through. You want a destination, not a launching pad." That's what he told me. So then imagine if CBHA's current building on the corner of First and Main was vacated and repurposed as another community-centered building, right there in the middle of town. In collaboration with Mid-Columbia Libraries, a fellow school district, and grant funds, a beautiful new facility emerged. Imagine if there was a large library on the top floor, a pregnancy resource center next door. And imagine the bottom floor became a baby college or early education center. Imagine what that would mean for this community. Maybe a place to teach people computer skills, or language lessons, or education classes, a place for kids to gather. In that building right there. Then imagine next door you have a pregnancy resource center, which is just a place to walk people through a hard time, to love on them, to help them with resources and parenting classes, help them get things for their babies, basic necessities. There are people in this community wanting to do these things. And then imagine downstairs you have Dr. Hurst's dream for this community, which is the baby college, a place for kids to play and to imagine and to learn. So then why? Research shows that reading is a learned activity. Othello's demographics, considered with national research, suggests that many children are unable to get the resources they need at home. Early intervention programs are essential. The building is an ideal location that's soon to be vacated. The current library building is small by any standards, especially considering the need for Spanish and English resources. A library attached to a pregnancy resource center and baby college creates a streamlined partnership and encourages early literacy, healthy lifestyle choices, and community engagement. Research shows that a sense of belonging and ownership is essential for individual wellness and success. If you feel connected, you're going to be healthier. And there's a lot of research that shows that. So then imagine if Mid-Columbia Libraries vacated the current building on Main Street, across the street from the current CBHA, and the city gifted that building to the school district. The building became a culinary skills center. Imagine there was a nonprofit coffee shop in the front entry, open after school to the public and operated by the special ed department of Othello High School. And then imagine if CBHA gifted or sold the 14th Avenue Clinic to the school district and Big Bend Community College. This building became a skill center for teaching students industry and life skills pertinent to the Othello community and the world. Imagine what it might look like, a place for kids to come. By the way, Ironworks closes at 4 o'clock every day. So this is a place where kids could come and just love on each other. Kids could learn. The older folks in this community could be teaching the younger ones skills that are pertinent to this community. It's a perfect location right next to the hospital in Avalon. Why? Skilled centers focused on vocations represented here, medical, agricultural, trades, create a natural environment for sustainability, personal growth, and future professions needed in this community. It creates hope, hope for these kids. Uh-oh. Teachers in the special ed department are already teaching some of the kids these skills. They need new facilities with opportunities to serve. Current school regulations prohibit certain foods from being served to other students. An off-site location would solve this dilemma, and it also creates an environment for kids to spend time at after school. So then imagine if the Othello School District designed a new high school facility on the land recently purchased. Imagine that high school had a performing arts center or auditorium that could be used for student productions, community performances, professional seminars, and traveling entertainment groups. Imagine it was something spectacular. Put together as one to create that connection and love. So why? A large auditorium is something missing from Othello. Community members have expressed desire for this to be built to attract visitors, add to the arts and cultural events in Othello, and provide more opportunities for you. This is a long conversation. By building a state-of-the-art facility, the district gives back to the community and also builds and fosters additional partnerships with stakeholders. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. African proverb. So this is going to cost a lot. It's a big investment. And these are just off the top of my head. I'm not an investment expert. For the school district, they're giving up 13 acres. They're going to have to work on a lot of remodeling. It's going to be a lot of time, a lot of expertise, a lot of resources. For CBHA, they're giving up two big buildings in the middle of town, some of the prettiest buildings in town. Time, expertise, resources. The city, a library building, time, resources, expertise, and making a community center a top priority. And for others, time, resources, expertise, and trust, that's kind of the investment for everybody. We're all different groups. If we come together, it's trusting that we're all in it for the right reasons. So it costs a lot, but what would you get in return? For the school district, they get the baby college, which Dr. Hurst has this big vision for. He just got back from going to Harlem, where he brought, I think, a group of 12 people. So he's planning on moving forward with this. Pregnancy Resource Center and library supporting that baby college. You get a hangout spot for kids, alternative paths for kids, opportunities for personal growth, connections to build trust, and stronger community ties. Those are just a couple things. I mean, there's so many more. For CBHA, they get resources that promote engagement and health. They just send some people down to learn more about engagement and how they get more engaged clients. And it naturally happens when you start doing stuff like this. It creates legacy and name recognition, connection opportunities, the technical school for sustainability for them. They like to hire from within, additional volunteer opportunities for staff. It saves money by collaborating with others, because Greg has some great ideas, an auditorium for seminars. And then what do we all get? New facilities that promote growth, city cohesion, engagement, a destination facility, resources for everyone, better living for all residents, connection, places to go, and job growth. Again, this is all about connection. It's all about bringing people together. So imagine if that's what we did. Imagine Othello coming together for the sake of our future, connecting our resources and individual gifts to achieve amazing dreams for Othello. Because where Othello will be in 5 years depends on all of us. Do you have any questions for me?
Council?
I think you laid out a very good presentation. And you've shared it with others, and you're now sharing it with us. And once everything's built, and once that's completed and it's done, where do we get the funding for it?
Well,
I mean, because people aren't going to be there doing this voluntarily.
Yeah.
Some of it, possibly. But you're talking about hiring facility managers, mm-hmm. facility personnel.
Yes.
And you're talking about maintenance and upkeep on some mm-hmm. seriously large facilities.
You know, I'm glad you asked that question. And I'll just tell you up front, I'm not an expert in this, but I have been talking to some experts in the last couple weeks. One is a gentleman by the name of Tad Parzan. He's an expert in something called collective impact, and it's bringing these big ideas and figuring out sustainability and how you can make that all work. And another person I talked to is Scott Holdman out of Grand Forks, and he's part of a medical foundation over there, and Impact, I think it's called Impact Foundation. He finds funding, and he's an expert in this as well. So there are people out there who know how to do this. And as I shared in my presentation, it's not for a lack of people that we don't have these things. You know, if we all came together and said, okay, how do we do this? Kind of going back to what Jim Farrell said, my friend, you know, what would I need to say yes to this? And then kind of going backwards from there, going, okay, what do we really want for Othello? If money was no object, in fact, that was the very first thing Scott told me to say. He said, if money was no object, what would we want? What would we dream for Othello? What's the vision? And then going back from there and saying, okay, how would we get there? Because there are lots of different people in this community who know different things. Greg Brandenburg, for instance, he knows how to get funding for different projects he does. The school district knows how to get funding for different. We all are experts in different ways. And so the first thing I would say is we would bring in a couple people that maybe know how to do these things and kind of walk us through the process of how to get started.
Okay, you're still talking about getting it established.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about the sustainability mm-hmm. and maintaining it and keeping it.
Right.
Who does that responsibility fall on?
Right. Again, that was the conversation I had with that Scott Holdman. He talked about that and how you continue to get funding. But it was
an
hour
long.
So
year-by-year basis, you would look for funding from organizations through donations?
Yeah.
I don't think it'd be a year-by-year basis, because if you can't get it the following year, then you shut down the whole thing.
So yeah, I know. So, but I'm looking at, you know, I mean, you put in a $10 million building. Minimum requirement would be 10% annually for sustainable asset value.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 10% of $10 million, it's $1 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to run that building.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I understand.
So I understand. Dream and dream big, you know, that's mm-hmm. the motto. And I think that's what you're doing. And it would be nice if this could all happen. I mm-hmm. just, I'm not skeptical. I'm just saying that there's things to think about. And our resources are limited.
Mm-hmm.
We have a city to look after. We have residents within the city to look after that, you know, are the base, tax base for this city.
Mm-hmm.
We do have money set aside for a civic center.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, though, it's just, yeah, like Wade said, it's minute in comparison to what your dreams are.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, we would really like to see people move to Othello and live in Othello, that work in Othello.
Mm-hmm.
I come from a company that we have over 125 people that probably live outside of the community, and they all earn good salaries, but there's nothing here to offer.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know the logistics. I've definitely encountered that question, but I do know that some of the people that I've had conversations with know. They do know the answers to those kind of questions, or at least could point us in the right direction. So it can be done, I believe.
So have you spoke to all of these individuals? And you've thrown Greg's name out there several times.
Mm-hmm. I've spoken with CBHA.
Okay.
Spoken with
so
Greg.
And he's on board with the commitments you've made for CBHA?
No, I don't know. I don't know. He's just come to a couple meetings. I went to one meeting where it was just him and I and Pastor Bob, and another one that I had here a couple weeks ago, and he came and brought Dulcie.
Okay.
So he's interested. I don't know how that he's committed. And honestly, the starting point isn't necessarily these specific ideas. It's what would we do if money was no object, and then going back from there, you know? How could we imagine big for this community? And then taking the strategic steps necessary to get there. And I know that's backwards, right? I'm not, I know that's crazy to say that, but that really is the way that this could work.
I'd just like to say, though, I'm glad to see somebody thinking this way within this community. Those are big dreams, and you dream big. That's great. But we just, there's three of us that went to Olympia to talk about necessities, things that the city needs today that would help sustain the city itself. And we get told that there's no capital funds, none. The state of Washington, according to them, are broke, you know? That's our legislators and our senators. They can't even fund education. They're stealing money from all accounts to fund education.
Mm-hmm.
They're raising the sales tax. The state of Washington is going to be raising sales tax because we do not have an income tax. That's the way they generate money. So a lot of state funding is tied up. It's not going to be there. It's not even for the public works necessities that the city needs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just being realistic.
No, I appreciate that. And, you know, it's not going to be easy. But I believe this could happen. I really do.
General, it's a change in the way we think of our community assets as opposed to being owned by silos. They're owned by the people. And I really like that concept. And I really like the idea that this could come together and work. And I had spoken, like I said, with Dr. Hurst this morning. One of the things that he said, the people that do the funding, that help with the funding of this, they also help with the sustainability funding.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the examples he gave us is that you don't invite people to the table and ask them for $25,000 when they have the capability of giving $25 million. And so what they do is this company does their research on different people and entities that could commit to giving $1 million a year or $2 million a year to a project like this.
Mm-hmm.
And help us with the sustainability. I know within the confines of the school district and the confines of Columbia Basin Health, other than the community center, they could fund a lot of the sustainability of the the building that would have the baby college, mm-hmm. Mid-Columbia Library we are funding with our current. So, I mean, there are ways it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
It's not impossible. It's just when you, because I felt the same way because I was at that presentation a week ago, and I almost said the exact same things John did. And yet, the more I let it sink in, if we really want it, we'll find a way to get it paid for and to keep it sustainable, because it could literally transform the entire community and the way the outside world looks at our little town. And our little town is rapidly growing into a city, and if we could come together like this, I appreciate your presentation. I appreciate all the effort that you've put into it. And I guess my next question to you is, what's next?
Yeah, what's the next step?
Yeah. We're having another meeting on March 14th from 4 to 6 p.m. here. I'd invite all of you to come if you'd like and bring anyone from the community you think would be invested or care about this.
Wednesday, when?
It's Tuesday, March 14th.
March 14th.
From 4 to 6.
Right here in this venue?
Yes.
4 to 6?
Any other thoughts or questions?
You're going to try to get all of the players in the same room together?
Which ones are you talking about?
Well, there's three, CBHA, the Ovello School District, and the City of Ovello.
Well, there you go. I already got two of them last time. If you guys come, that makes three. Actually, I had three. I had the mayor and Adams County Development Council, and, well, I didn't have you, but I got you.
And Wade was there.
And Wade.
Okay.
And Spencer. Yeah.
Any other questions, council? Comments? Thank you very much, Janelle.
Thank you.
Should we go to item 3.03, grant request for Highway 17 intersection study? Travis?
Sure. I just wanted to give you a heads up that the Regional Transportation Council, Quadco, which is what we're part of, they are starting a new two-year funding cycle, and they are putting out a request for projects for planning grants. And last time this came up, we did a 50-50 match proposal for the intersection studies at Highway 26 and 14th Avenue and Bench Road and Highway 24. And so those got completed this year, although we've since found out that the county went out and got a grant to do a roundabout at the intersection of Bench and Highway 24. So we had a study on that section, and it essentially reached the same conclusion that the county had, only they were just quicker to get the grant approved for that. So they should be starting that pretty soon. I believe that might even be this summer that they'll start working on that roundabout. But this year with this new call, what I would like to do with your permission is to put in some applications for Highway 17, both at Main Street and Lee, because we know that there's going to be some projects that are affecting Lee, including the high school and Angel's project up there on, between 7th and 14th. So it would be nice to have that background information at the intersection of Lee. Then it would also, it's about time that we have a good study done on out there at the watering hole for potential impacts, and at what point are we going to need lights and a roundabout at Main Street. Lights or a roundabout at Main Street. So if you're okay with that, I'm going to work with the consultant to prepare the application, and I can come back to you later with a resolution which we'll need for that proposal.
So you're talking about putting a roundabout in 17 at Cunningham?
I don't know. We'll have to take a look at that. The assumption is that something will be needed there, but we'll let the engineers figure that out.
Fast.
Yeah.
Makes sense?
He's just asking for, yep, that's okay.
Well, we know we are growing and we're moving forward with certain projects. So why not, yeah, go ahead and do from Lee Road to Main Street all the way into Highway 17 and 14.
Stay out front. Okay.
Okay.
And you also have 3.04, Travis, critical areas ordinance update.
Did that come from your meeting with the Planning Commission?
No. From the last Quadco meeting, actually.
Have we had that Planning Commission meeting?
Okay.
Did you have the Planning Commission meeting? In February?
February, yes, we did.
But we have, because the last 2 months have been holidays, we canceled January and February. We've held it on a Wednesday because of the holiday. So it's the first one I've had since November of last year. And I wanted to give you a quick update on where we are, since we have a planning-only grant from Community Development Block Grants or Department of Commerce to get that done. So we essentially have four critical areas that need to be updated. One of them is the wetland ordinance. One of them is the frequently flooded areas ordinance, habitat ordinance, and then, so that's fish and wildlife habitat. And then the last one is, critical aquifer recharge area, or CARA, and then geohazards. And so far to date, I've taken to the Planning Commission the geohazards. We had a geohazards ordinance, which is steep slopes, erosion, landslide hazards, volcanic hazards, those type of natural hazards. And the city of Othello just does not have a lot of code language that covers it. So what I did is I looked around for a similar jurisdiction, and I found the city of Ellensburg. They are very much like Othello in that they don't have a lot of steep slopes, don't have a lot of the identified hazards that the city of Othello does. So I kind of took their ordinance, which was adopted and updated in 2013, so we know it is accepted by the state as having the best available science, which is kind of the standard that the Department of Commerce looks at. And so I took that and went to the mapping stuff, which I can go over with you later. I've got a sample here, but I don't have the geohazard ones ready for you. Basically, just walk through as to what was applicable to the city of Othello, where the hazards were and how they were mapped. And the Planning Commission felt, yes, this seemed like the best way to proceed. And so they reviewed that. We looked at the frequently flooded ordinance, and the only flooding that is mapped is on the other side of State Route 17. So this wadi, or this draw, this coulee on the other side of the highway, that has some floodplain in it, and it goes under Highway 17 in a culvert onto this property here, and it actually goes under Highway 26 to a draw, through a culvert to a draw here out in the field. But if you actually look at it, when you go out in the field, it actually looks like it's the drainage ditch that's on the Hampton property here. And it's just influenced. If there were high water or flood waters on the other side of the highway, it wouldn't be able to drain out of those fields. So it's technically in our growth area, but it's not within the city of Othello. So what would happen is, upon annexation or a request for annexation, we would have a quick discussion with them about getting that delineated and determining whether or not it could be filled, or whether there's some way to handle that drainage with on-site stormwater. So this is an example of how we would adopt an ordinance that wouldn't affect anything within the city, but if somebody annexed, it would give you the opportunity to make sure that they're not creating problems for the city down the road. But it's kind of the typical example of what we're dealing with for critical areas ordinance, because there are just not a lot of them. This one that you're actually looking at is the fish and wildlife habitat ordinance. And these blue or pink, they're actually purple with the outline and pink in the middle. These are identified wetlands under the National Wetland Inventory. But the key to keep in mind, and that is not within our urban growth area, and it may not technically even be a wetland. But you can see Rodeo Lake is also identified as wetland, but it may be that it is getting its water source A, from the canal, and B, from irrigation. And in doing the research for the ordinance update, the Department of Ecology has come out with some new guidelines that are considered best available science, and they've only come out in the last few years. And basically what it says is, artificial wetlands include wetlands that are fed by irrigation water. And so, for example, I'll use Bob Carlson, since he's here and we've had this conversation. So he has a piece of property, or some of these properties down here, south of Industrial Way and north of Bob's Corner, where he's got some drainage coming through his property. And that drainage has cattails growing in it or next to it. And technically, it is irrigation-fed wetlands, according to the state. And their new guidelines basically say, if you have an irrigation system and you were to go in and line that drainage way, or you were to stop doing irrigated agriculture on that property and the wetlands dry up, that is not considered a wetland violation, and those wetlands are not considered regulated or jurisdictional under the ordinances. So in those cases, a lot of what's identified in those aerial photographs as wetlands may not technically be jurisdictional wetlands under the state ordinance. So our attempt at updating this ordinance identifies the new mapping tools that are available to us online. So in other words, we don't have to go out and decide where the wetlands are. We're just going to simply leave that to the state. And then if somebody wants to develop, the first thing I'll do is I'll take a look at this map and I will do a predetermination, which is judging if there's anything on this map that they need to go out and do a little bit more work on. If I don't see any red flags, I'll just issue their permits. If there is something on here, like some of these purple areas, like there was one down on the bus barn site for the school district, they would actually have to go out and get a private consultant to delineate that wetland depending on where they want to build. Now, the way the ordinance works is if you have a low quality wetland and you have a high impact to that wetland, you have to provide more information. But if you have a low quality wetland and you're 200 feet away from it, you wouldn't need to do any additional work simply by saying it's out in the middle of the field, we're not going to impact it. So there are ways that the developer can make decisions to avoid the whole permitting question altogether. But ultimately, if you make a decision that you've got to get right next to it and you have to be 25 feet away, you have to do a study, you have to hire a professional, you have to do wetland mitigation, but that's because of a choice that you made. If you back up to 50 feet, you might as have half as much to do. If you back up to 100 feet, you might not have anything to do. So it's a case-by-case situation where our ordinance allows the developer to decide how much hassle do they want to get involved in. If, like the school district, they delineated it, but it's nowhere near the bus barn, so they just mapped it and walked away. The fence is far enough away that it doesn't have any significant impacts. Whereas if they were going to build right on top of it, then they have to start getting involved with additional questions and dealing with state and federal agencies. But ideally, what the ordinance will do is trying to keep all of our questions internal. So we've drafted that one, and it'll be coming to you probably next month, hopefully, to take a look at. And the last one that I wanted to talk about today was our habitat ordinance. The habitat ordinance is going to be another one of these cases where we're going to use the existing language and we're just going to update the mapping sources, because they refer to old maps and old books, whereas now it's all done by websites, so it's a lot easier. If you could zoom out just a bit, what's great about the city of Othello is there are literally only a couple locations within the city of Othello that actually have bird-related impacts. And okay, right there, perfect. So if you look at, so here is Main Street, here's the highway. You can't see it very well, but there's a dot there. There's also a dot there, there's also a dot there. Those are what they call point occurrences, and it means at some point in the last 50 years, somebody has seen a specific type of endangered species. In this case, it's a burrowing owl. And so there are a few occasions where burrowing owls, they may not be living in that field, but they have been spotted. So if you actually zoom in, we're going to zoom in to that point right there. What it says is
is a breeding area for this burrowing cattle, and you can look at the full menu and the information that we know about it, and what it says is, okay, so this one doesn't even have, oh, specific date. So it was a, somebody spotted an owl on this site in January 1st, 2004. So that's how old this information is. In this case, it tells you whether it's a candidate or whether it's a listed species, whether it's a point occurrence, and some additional information. And the other thing you can do here is you can go to the management recommendations from the state. And we have a couple. The other one we have is a ferruginous hawk. And if somebody were to come in and propose a development on a site that has one of these, this is simply the recommendations that that person would have to look at. So for example, avoid disturbance of nesting. And in this case, the hawks nest in trees. So if you're familiar with the fields behind Wahidas, there are no trees. So in this case, the developer wouldn't have to do anything, or, you know, if they were looking at cutting down trees, this would be my opportunity to say, okay, I'll tell you what, you need to save this tree because it's got a nest in it. Or, you know, another example is quite often these will have things like during the nesting season from April through June 14th, you have to limit your type of construction to certain hours of the day, you know, because if they're out hunting during the mornings, you shouldn't be making noise out in the morning. So in other words, your construction might have to be, you know, external construction with heavy equipment might be limited to the hours of 12 to 8 rather than 6 in the morning till 8 at night. So these are the kind of things that you have to take a look at from a state management point of view. Now I will back up one more time. So that gives you an idea of kind of how you would handle the management of this. Now you'll see that there is a gray area.
This entire area, this is identified as the hawk breeding area, and it actually goes all the way up to Moses Lake. So that hawk that's endangered may be located in the Potholes Reservoir. It could be located, you know, it could be a nest in Moses Lake. I have no way of knowing, but basically what this would be is if somebody was proposing a development up in that location, we would pull out the management recommendation. And again, if they're not removing any trees for the hawk, there's one of the recommendations down. And that's kind of how this is handled. Or if there is a hawk spotted on the site, then they would have to get a professional consultant to come in and take a look at it. But as you can see, other than this hawk that could be in Moses Lake or could be in the Potholes Park, those are kind of the issues that are addressed by the critical areas ordinance for habitat. So any questions about this so far?
What's with the woodpeckers?
What's that?
What's with the woodpeckers? They were on the list.
So they're not in this part of the state. Yeah, there are.
Well, they're probably on my roof pecking my.
Oh,
my.
Well, but it may not be an endangered species. It may be a common one. Yeah. In which case, there's no management techniques for
repellent
it.
Gun.
Repellent. Yeah, it's a woodpecker repellent. Okay, council. Very good, Travis. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very comprehensive. So more to come, in essence.
Yes.
All right. Moving to item 4, committee reports. Do you have any committee reports? Item 5, new business. Any new business tonight? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move to item 6, executive session for personnel. Item 6.01, executive session for 5 minutes. Okay. And I
would like Becky and Spencer to, and Chief to prepare the council chambers for executive session. And who are we going to keep? Is it just going to be us? Yeah, okay.
Go talk to him and what you want.
Okay, I call this meeting back into order after our executive session at 7:47 p.m. Council is also going to receive Planning Commission minutes. Having no further business to come before the council, I'm going to adjourn tonight's meeting at 7:47 p.m.
Corey was, oh, you had-